Are you ready for this?
Yeah, it's your pod blast, and this month we get smooth. We're talking George De Bell, Worcestershire 2020 cricket, Ravi Bapara, and my holiday in the Lake District. Oh yeah, I like the bit in the song. I like it. It's where he goes, "We are the generation. We got things to say."
Yeah, it really speaks to me that bit because we are the generation, yeah. Aren't we?
And this month or week or whatever, we certainly have got things to say.
We're going to be talking about people of our generation. Well, it's not our generation, but people that are important to our generation.
Yeah, like George De Bell.
People that are really important to our generation, Ross. People like, for other generations, Jimi Hendrix, Bob Dylan. For us, Mike Atherton.
Well, to a certain extent.
For me.
Okay. And Ravi Bapara, for me. He tweets well, doesn't he, Ravi Bapara?
Oh, we're definitely going into his tweet.
Oh, let's go. But first, on this smooth edition of your Podblast, here's something smooth.
Well, I've been wanting to play this on the Podblast for a little while, Ross. A lot of cricket fans out there who listen to multiple cricket podcasts.
Oh, the multi-blasters.
The multi-blasters may recognise this little tune. If you don't, let's let you listen to it first, and then you can tell us afterwards what you think it is. Tune!
Big tune.
Big tune. Listeners, if you didn't guess, that's the intro music for Cricket Writers on TV, one of the Sky things.
I haven't heard that.
It's an hour long.
Oh,
it's quite a
just
commitment.
Of that music?
No.
I would like it if it was.
I've been trying to put in my mind, where does this music come from? What does it remind me of?
It's sort of like a holiday program off a digital channel that I'd never watch.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's the kind of music that they'll play in during Cash in the Attic during one of the montages.
That's good.
Or the other alternative that occurred to me is it's the music that they play over montages of cities as you land in them in an aeroplane.
That is what it is.
Well, now for something else smooth.
What's your favourite smooth thing, Alex?
Barry White.
What's
Barry White specifically making love to Barry White?
Himself?
Yeah, to the man himself.
Jesus. What's the smoothest thing you've heard in the last 2 weeks?
I'm thinking of something very specific, Ross.
Oh, go on.
Very specific.
Okay.
It came in the Switch Hit podcast.
Oh.
And try not to groan like that. And it was everyone's favourite pundit, George De Bell. Andrew McGlashan had been talking. You stop groaning. Andrew McGlashan will be talking as usual, and there's a lot of chatter, and then cutting through it like a hot knife through butter came to Bell just like this.
Oh, I thought he looked fantastic. Real class. So calm now. He looks like a really good international player. Obviously had some bad luck in the last few months with opportunities ruined by injury. I think he's on the cusp of something really exciting now.
I mean, it's unfortunate editing at the end there, but he did make that noise.
I'm glad you've heightened that noise using some sort of enhanced stereo equipment.
There's absolutely nothing artificial about that noise.
it's so sexy, isn't it?
He is.
It's the sexiest podcast.
I was just about to say he is sexy. I don't know.
You really do think that, don't you? I think he's our favourite pundit, isn't he? He gets better every week.
Better every week. He's constantly put in, particularly on that Sky Cricket Writers podcast, with all of these, the normal journos who are doing the papers, who all seem to have been drinking misery juice. And there's George De Bell in the middle of it.
He just comes in, glides in like a sexy knight.
Glides in like they put fairy liquid all over the floor and
he slides in. Just in a cricket thong.
Yeah. And he speaks nothing but sexy sense.
You know, nothing but jizzy truth.
But it's true.
I'm sorry, George. I mean, but we do love you.
My fear is that he if he were to listen to this, he would think that we're mocking him, and we're not George Debella is the best pundit out there.
I do think he's brilliant.
And it's not just because he's the only one who answers his Twitter,
no,
either.
No, that's not the case. He is just fantastic. I thought his words on Tom Maynard, his obituary of Tom Maynard, was fantastic.
Yeah, what was it in particular about that you thought was good?
Well, I think, as happened around the Winehouse death, and we're going into a little bit of life here. This isn't just cricket. I don't like piousness around young deaths. It happened with Gately, Stephen Gately. They thought someone was a bit odd about it. Thought it was a bit seedy.
Well, that was homophobic, wasn't it?
That's homophobic, and I think people are just, there's going to be a little bit of piousness around.
You think that there's a touch of disapproval?
There's a touch of disapproval about the death of the young in a very disturbing way, I find sometimes. Now, obviously, the cricketing world wouldn't. Hasn't said anything like that at all, but I thought the sort of there but for the grace of God words of Debell on the podcast and indeed in his obituary were fantastic.
Yeah, they were Debell's people's princess.
Yeah, they were.
They summed it up absolutely right.
He was terrific.
And the moment he said that really rang true.
Yeah, he goes from strength to strength, Debell. And he's just added an extra element of extra smooth.
And I like his opinions.
His opinions, sure.
Yeah, I like his opinions. I like his look.
I don't know what he looks like.
I love his loyalty to the county game.
Oh, I like that.
And in particular, recently I've enjoyed his slightly idiosyncratic demands for cricket to be made into an Olympic sport for the sake of the French.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Is he French a bit? No?
Is he?
What, Dubelle?
Well, it's certainly not.
It's a step away from the Dauphin.
It's not very far away from the
George Dauphin.
Smooth man, smooth opinions.
Now, usually I don't do this, but go ahead on, break them off with a little previews of the remix.
Now, I'm not trying to be cool, but now I'm going to talk about Mike Atherton.
Yeah, let's talk about Mike Atherton. Mm-hmm. Someone's a bit more flinty.
Ooh,
a bit rough around the edges. Ugh. We don't like to gossip on the blast.
No.
We do like to gossip.
We do a little.
And I love it when you just get a taste of the things that the writers never write about, like Flintoff's clear dislike of Mike Atherton.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, it's been coming out during the course of the week on Twitter. Mm. There's been comments, and then there's been a bit of press coverage in the Mail Online, in their gossip column. Mm. Flintoff, it seems, was on an ITV programme, was asked, why don't you want to appear on Sky along with the other England captains? And he said, he didn't want to spend any time around Mike Atherton. Mm. He might have called him an effing prick.
Oh!
And it's not the first time Flintoff has said that. But I think, Ross, that you've heard rumours before.
What was it I heard before? I can't remember.
The Oval.
I'm glad you asked. I said smoothly. I'll tell you what, it's very smooth. Alex has brought olives.
Yeah, we're eating.
We're eating olives. How smooth is that? But yeah, I'd heard, someone said to me once, while I was stewarding, when I was younger, at the Oval, that they'd broken into the press office, the sort of commentary box area. I wasn't really prepared for this bit. And they said, what? I said, what were they like in there? They went, well, exactly as you'd expect. Tuffers, legend, Atherton, prick.
Yeah, pricks. Isn't that weird?
Is
that
it, man, though?
He was my hero.
I don't know who he definitely is. Maybe he has a way about him.
Atherton doesn't return my calls anymore, not since the incident. And so in order to get his side of the story...
Oh, you had to buy his autobiography.
Well, in fact, I already owned it.
Sure, you just had to dust it off.
Yeah, just dust it
take
off.
Take a look at your favourite sections.
Mike Atherton's opening up, which is ironic in the... A true sense of irony, because he doesn't open up at all. He just talks about a series of cricket matches which he's involved in.
And didn't really open up while he was batting either. He's sort of only in the...
Well, he technically opened up the innings.
But never his shoulders, my liege.
Anyway, for those of you who have my 2003 edition in paperback, it's to be found at reference page 145, second paragraph down. Atherton, I can't do the voice, but... a good dressing room. Do you want to try it, Ross?
Where is
it? Can you do Lancastrian?
I'm going to try and do Atherton.
Ross is an actor. He's available for parties.
A good dressing room not only accepts people as they are, but is a place where honest opinions can be expressed and criticism is taken in the way it's intended. In my early years at Old Trafford, this was a definite strength of the team. There were some strong characters, and mostly it was a mature dressing room. You knew that forthright opinions could be given and no grudges would be held. In a team meeting in Cheltenham in 1989, Jack Simmons told David Hughes to his face that he was wasting a place in the team. And yet they were seen eating together, fish and chips, no doubt. Later that evening, in my later years at Lancaster, it became less so, largely because of the influx of some younger, less mature players. Criticism was not as easily accepted and therefore less often made, and the dressing room was less open and poorer for it.
In later years at Lancashire, it became less so because of the influx of some younger, less mature players.
Less mature players.
A veiled reference to Andrew Flintoff.
Methinks so, Milige.
I do believe so.
He became a bit like an Alan Bennett talking head at the end there.
It was. Was it Yorkshire rather than Lancashire?
I was just shooting for Atherton. I quite like Vaughan. That's who, Vaughan's easy to deal with. He's quite into that sort of, well, yeah, you know, I've got something else. I've got a gazebo.
The absolute classic this week for those of us who like a good cricket impression or just listening to a good cricketing voice was Tony Greig's Cowdrey lecture, which could be mostly summarised as endure a bunch of shits.
Yeah. It was a one-man attack on a country.
Yeah, which you think he would have learnt. After the old grovel comment. Apparently not.
Greig is a legend, and there are rumours from Dickie Birds that we're going to have him on this very show. What do you say to that?
It's possible.
It's certainly possible.
We know his nephew. Watch this space.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
But the Podblast is certainly in service. By the way, do you think we'll get sued by R. Kelly? Do you think?
This is a man who wrote that R&B opera. He owes us. We can sue him.
He does owe us.
I had to watch that.
Yeah.
Not from beginning to end. It's a bit long.
Bloody, he is smooth though, isn't he?
Talking of smooth men, Ross.
And men who possibly bit of characters, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or following on from the Atherton debacle.
We enjoy a character.
I'm going to take that grunt out of my repertoire, I think. Anyway, go on.
Ravi Papara.
Ooh.
We want to talk about whether he's the next England number six. And we also want to congratulate our 300th Twitter follower, Ants69.
Congratulations,
it's
sir.
Been a while. We promised you your topics. And we said to Ants69, we apologise if that's not your real name. But
or
we
not
said
how you pronounce it.
It could be wrong.
Ants, three Z's in there.
He said, can you talk about pundits' use of Twitter? And can you talk about whether it's a rip-off for spectators when they don't get to see the England first team or have you rest people? So we're going to deal with both those topics.
Ants absolutely smacked it out of the park. By the way, I forgot to say at the beginning of the show, I'm trying to take on the field during this show, so I'm going to be using quite a heavy chat.
Well, first of all, can we start with the Twitter question?
Yeah.
With Twitter fans. I think, in summary, our position is, do we think Twitter is good for pundits? Yes, we do.
I like it a lot. Now, you get a lot of, if you sign up to the amount of cricket news and sort of and sign up to the personalities of cricket, like ourselves and probably Ants does too, then you do get a lot of cricket chat.
You get some gems as well.
I think it's mostly gems. There's some just sort of chatter, like you're in the dressing room, perhaps a dressing room you might not want to be in, full of people just talking about what they had for dinner. But then there's some
Michael Dubery, you know who you are, Chelsea player of the 1990s.
Yeah, brilliant.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
But I think cricketers are pretty good, and I like a few things we've heard from Ravi recently.
Yeah, this is today. This is Rob Key, Kent captain, and Ravi. Rob Key, Peckham, isn't London lovely? To which Ravi Babara says, "We're not all born with a silver spoon in our mouth, mate."
Have that.
Rob Key in response. Ravi Papara, are you suggesting I was being negative? I said it was lovely. # stupid elephant, which I think must be a nickname or something for him.
Yeah.
He's known as being dopey. We can come back to that.
I guess so.
Ravi Papara's response to that. Rob Key, I know your sarcastic ways, Rob. Got worse since you moved to the country and started shooting as a hobby and taking cooking lessons. Put down, Papara.
Yeah. South
Put
London
down.
One.
It's Rob Iannucci Hill. And Alistair Campbell all over again.
Yeah. That's absolutely brilliant.
The great thing about this is the accessibility of it.
Yeah, I like
that. That would have been lost to us.
Yeah, I really like that.
So I think in answer to your question, yeah, you're right. It can lead to lazy journalism. It can lead to lazy podblasts. We can read sections of Twitter. We don't actually include ourselves in the definition of good pundit, but no. If we did, we'd definitely be guilty.
We're the self-appointed pundits of South London.
As charged. But, so that's our position on that one. Other question there, quickly, before we move on then, Ross, is are you ripping off the Spectator if you start resting players? What's your opinion on that one?
I am quite. I mean, I think the Switch hit addressed this in a similar way. Other podcasts are available. I'm quite all for play. You see, this is me. I'm into cricket. I don't know whether you've noticed. I talk about it a lot. You've heard some of it, perhaps too much of it on this show. But I like to see the new players. I'm quite into the resting. I know people might turn out. I have to say, I don't think like young kids come out going, Dad, will we see James Anderson? Will we see? I think they just want to see the England team. I don't know. I think if they were replaced by 11 nobodies, they'd plucked out of the county circuit, as probably did happen. At one point when we used to rotate players, like we'd change our pants.
Well, you've put your finger on the very argument which I was going to make, which is this. You know, it's all very well to say, oh, Anderson's been rested, so I've been shortchanged. But that is the privilege of an England spectator in 2012. Let's take, we always talk about the 93 Ashes, but it's a perfect example. You can take the 89 Ashes as well. What about the spectator back then? Because he could be watching, he thinks, at any given moment, Graham Hick, Mark Ramprakash, his local boy, going to see Ramprakash at the Oval. Ramprakash played the last three games and doing quite well, averaging around sort of, you know, 35, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a second. They've just replaced two-thirds of the team.
With Min Patel and Harsha Bogle.
Oh, yeah, the equivalent.
Whoever.
Yeah, whoever they may be.
Them.
So, yeah, you can talk about shortchanging the spectator, but the selectors have been shortchanging the spectator since pretty much the dawn of time until Duncan Fletcher and Andy Flair started doing something about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't particularly mind. I think if it happened every game, I think if you lose probably more than two, that'd be pretty gutting.
Yeah.
But I'd feel shortchanged every time I watch an England ODI or 2020 team at the moment because I don't get to watch Kevin Peterson because he had a sulk and so did the England management.
Yeah, I agree. I would just say this. I just think we're in a great moment of cricket. I think sometimes it's just stuff to chat about and resting doesn't bother me at all. Maybe Ants feels differently, I don't know, but I think it's okay and it's just the sign of a healthy team.
Well, this podcast is racing by, Ross,
whoa!
Isn't it? But let's try and deliver what we promised this week.
Deliver.
And let's talk about England keepers.
Certainly, let's do it. Not keepers of the realm, not keepers of the goal, but keepers of the wicket.
Yeah, in ODI specifically. We thought about talking about the England number six position, and we can come back to it. But the more immediate issue, which has quietened down just over the course of the last game or so.
Just a little.
Incidentally, probably the last game, the third ODI, not really having an impact one way or the other on this debate.
Because of the tell you had a great game.
Yeah, who had a great game?
The rain.
The rain.
It was all over it.
The rain is having a fantastic season.
Oh, my God.
It's been really intermittent in previous years.
Really well.
It's tended not to do so well later on in the season, in July and August. But this year, it doesn't seem
right
to be
through.
Stopping.
It's had a very consistent time.
The other guy who we think is consistent is Craig Kieswetter, but he's getting a little bit of heat.
I like Kieswetter. The man came in, and we've had problems at the top of that order. He settled it down, at least for a while, and then we won a 2020 World Cup, our first limited over silverware ever, I would have thought.
I don't think we give enough credit to World Cup winners, and I think, you know, for Yardie and Luke Wright, that's got to come in 2020 as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're still both good players, actually. I think they're having great seasons, and both of them, I don't know whether Yardie will for obvious reasons, but both of them could well figure.
Well, I'm going to Sussex, Surrey, tomorrow night at the Oval, ooh, weather permitting, so I can report from that. We had a look at Sussex, 3 weeks ago down at Lords?
And Yardie, very strong, I thought.
Yardie looked fantastic. Right, he didn't have a great game, but he's been doing brilliantly since then.
He scored runs.
And we're going to come back to 2020 and your beloved Worcestershire.
Yep.
Let's talk stats.
Oh.
Why stats? Stats illuminate the game because they cut through the fog of opinion and give us cold hard fact.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Thank you. I'm not sure it worked, but it was beautiful.
It certainly did.
Kieswetter, 36 games for England ODI, average of 30, strike rate of 91. He scored a century and 550s.
It's not bad, is it? It's no mean feat. And he's a presence, and I don't think he ever goes as long as people think. without scoring a few runs or contributing, and he's very athletic behind the stumps.
Yeah, I mean, that catch, that left-handed take the other day in the second ODI, did you see that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic catch from Keyes-Bennett. He missed a stumpy in the first game, I think.
Was
it the 2020 against the West Indies?
But he definitely missed.
He missed something, and you know there was talk.
I think it was the 2020. I just think we actually had a very good generation with Steve Davis and Matt Prior of wicketkeepers, and to a certain extent, we might talk about them. Oh, Jos Buttler.
Well, we're definitely going to talk about, you know, Buttler and Bairstow, and let's not forget other out there as well: Mustard, Ambrose, Foster, Reed.
True, very true.
This is the golden age of English wicketkeepers.
Not bad. If anything, this is the one area, unlike the bowling department, where we haven't quite pinned down players, maybe not given someone enough of a go because we've had too much choice. And I think it's time to stick with Keyes-Vetter. And I like him a lot. I think he gets too much stick.
Well, Steve Davis has scored. He scored some runs. He's averaging 30 as well in 8 ODIs.
Yep.
His strike rate's higher than Keyes-Vetter's. It's at 105, and he's also hit a 50.
Yep.
So you can't really say that Davis has done anything wrong.
No. I mean, Davis could well get his chance in the future as well, and I think he should do. He's a terrific hitter of the cricket ball, certainly opening up in 2020.
It'll be interesting to see how he does with Surrey now that Surrey are going to go through some very difficult times. Davis is part of that squad.
Yeah.
The other guy who I think is bizarrely ignored is Prior, but he's played 68 games now and he only averages 24. And he's never scored a century, unlike Keyes-Vetter. And he's got two fewer 50s than Keyes-Vetter.
It's something. There is something in your mind. Well, yeah. I guess it's in your mind. You suddenly go, that guy hasn't scored any runs. You suddenly get exhausted. I got very exhausted with Matt Prior at one day, international level. I think he's a terrific test player. But the thought was that he'd had his chance. He has. The thought was now maybe that Keyes-Vetter is coming to the end of his chance, and I think that's wrong.
Yeah, well, let's go Bairstow. He's had 6 ODIs. His batting average is 22, no 50s, no 100s. But Bairstow is averaging 45 at 2020.
Well, he didn't get to bat in the last game. Such was the brilliance that we haven't mentioned of Alex Hales. But he's a great player, and I think he'll certainly stick in the 2020 squad for a while yet.
Yeah, and then we've got Buttler, whose statistics from his one ODI game is an average of 0 because it was a duck. Slightly unfortunate. Yeah. There's the, I don't know whether you know why this is, but the chatter seems to be, and we're not actually at the ground, so it's hearsay chatter, reported to us via normally George De Bell, that people don't consider Bairstow and Buttler to be quite there with the gloves. And I wonder whether that comes from that old-fashioned idea that the glove man was a specialist position.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Worcestershire at the moment, maybe I'll go into it. I'll just put a little bit of brackets around.
That dovetails perfectly. Let's talk about Worcestershire.
I mean,
home is where the heart is, Ross.
Thank you so much. Ben Scott, Worcestershire's current keeper, excellent glovesman. He's not so much of a batsman. He usually comes in about 8 or 9. And that's true. I mean, back in the day, you know, we had a number 11. With the gloves, Worcestershire, a guy called Tim Edwards. How good at wicketkeeping must he have been to be able to be in the team solely on his glovemanship?
How long ago was that?
It was about 10 years ago.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, but Steve Davis, I think, is a superior gloveman, maybe. But they always talk about people not being quite good enough with the gloves. Scott, I suppose, is a specialist gloveman. He's very good. We've also got we've got a lot of riches in 2020. I think Worcester at the moment. And I think, although we've lost just about an hour ago against Gloucestershire, they're a handy unit, and we beat them by some margin the game before. We've got two games left against the mighty Somerset one, who we did slay at Taunton. Moeen Ali's opened up quite well. Slanky has. Phil Hughes has been outstanding. And I want to install Worcester as the dark horses for the 2020.
That's an interesting call, Ross. My dark horse is not so dark, really, but Hampshire.
Good team. Briggs and Murtagh.
Yeah.
Not Murtagh, obviously, just Briggs.
Can we go back to Phil Hughes for a moment? Mm. The Aussies are over here. I'm probably tempting fate because I'll probably go out and win the next two ODIs. Mm. But what has Phil Hughes got to do? I mean, you look at Cowan in the Test team. Mm. And then they've got that guy Forrest who came in. Bailey's come out the 2020 and he's captain. And Phil Hughes is just scoring for fun for Worcestershire. And under some pressure, another guy with him who is pure class and still only 25, Moeen Ali.
Well, look, Moeen on his day can hit you out of the park and he'll bowl you some really decent off-cutters, and he's working on the mystery ball.
I like Samit Patel. You like Samit Patel. Mm. But Moeen Ali is a better batsman than Samit Patel. And is he as good a spinner?
I don't know. I don't think he is yet. I think there's an interesting couple of seasons for Moeen. He's still got a great level of inconsistency.
I just wonder whether he can take that one day second spinner position or indeed that Indian tour test team second spinner position.
I think he needs a really strong second half of the season, I'd say.
He does. He's only averaging about 35, isn't he, in the championship, which doesn't do him any favours at all. But he just looks the part. You know, Trescothick looked the part in his own way and Fletcher could see it. Yep. Moeen Ali, to our eyes,
yep.
to our...
He just... Humble eyes.
Humble eyes is he's the real deal, isn't he?
He's got a great beard.
He's the real deal, yeah. And he's got a great beard.
I love him. Love him. So, finally, I was on my way back from the Lake District. Yeah, had a lovely time, lovely views. I was thinking about a lot of things, thinking about Ant's questions. Was there too much punditry in cricket? What about punditry? What does it mean? What does sports news mean when people have to masquerade sports news as real news? When Sam Matterface, oddly named because he has to read things out and say them as if they actually matter, when everyone knows Paul McGrath went for a shit isn't really news. And I thought, what is sports news? Thought I'd go and get a newspaper. Well, all they had left for the Daily Mail. And it was a Jubilee Review special. This was a 6-hour journey. Well, it was the only paper they had. I sat there and I read. And what I read was disappointing, shocking, yeah, awful. It was an Auschwitz special, during which the players' reactions to Auschwitz were reviewed. Wayne Rooney looked sad and moaned. Phil Jagielka spoke of sadness around Auschwitz. Look, do we really need these people, the minutiae of their lives? Told to us. No, we don't. I thought, where does sports news go from here? Where does football news? We're coming up to Euro 2012. What's going to happen there? And I read on. And there was the answer. Possibly the end of sports writing as we know it. The humble opening read, give me an E, give me an N, give me a G, give me an L. No, wait, just give me some E, because I'd have to be off my face on mind-bending drugs to watch this England team. Possibly the worst bit of writing I've ever read, let alone in a newspaper or anywhere, or even on a toilet wall. And I think, Al, it spelt the death of sports news as we know it. So here we are. What do? This is the aftermath.
Who was it, Ross? Who wrote it? Who was responsible?
I can't even remember the man's name.
Whoever's out there, whoever's broken his faith in the very thing that he loved more, maybe more than anything else in this world.
Sports news.
Get in touch.
Apologise.
The Cricket Podblast.
Podblast.
At gmail.com. @CricketPodblast on Twitter.
And tell me why.
And apologise.
Please. 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 Why? So join us next week. It's the post-apocalypse of sport. What are we gonna talk about?
We're gonna talk about it all.
Cabaricon and find out where Ronsley's at this week. Join us next time.